Well, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, February 10th, and this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. I'm Representative Gomberg, acting as co-chair today with the gavel, and we're going to go ahead and start our proceedings today. Even though not everybody is here, I'm sure they will be joining us soon. Do I need to gavel the opening of the meeting?
Yes, sir. You do.
All right. Well, that's always fun. And I did indicate the date, February 10th. And today we are going to be hearing from the Oregon Real Estate Agency. Ms. Deister, is there anything that you want to share with us before I open the hearing in terms of where we're going and what the game plan is for today?
Co-Chair Gomberg, today you will be hearing from the Oregon Real Estate Agency. We've got the Executive Director, Mr. Gene Bentley, and I believe their Board Chair is also in the audience today. This is another agency budget that actually has no policy option packages included in either their agency request or the governor's budget, but there are likely to be some adjustments that are necessary to provide for an adequate ending balance. When we finally get to work session, we'll have recommendations to help do that.
So. Excellent. And is there a sign-up sheet in case there's any public testimony floating around someplace?
It's over there.
It's in the back corner in case anybody's interested. All right. Well, let me go ahead and open the public hearing on SB 5537. And Mr. Bentley, if you'd like to come on up and bring anybody that you'd like to join you initially.
Mr. Chair,
please.
As he comes forward, sort of news from my neighborhood. Senator Monroe approached me on the floor and is very ill and asked to be excused and asked to have that noted on the record.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that with us. Hope he's back soon.
He doesn't breathe on any of us.
Yeah. Well, I hope he's not back too soon. All right. If you'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Yes. Thank you, Co-Chair Palmer. My name is Gene Bentley, for the record, and I am Commissioner of the Real Estate Agency.
Yeah.
Co-Chair Gomberg?
No.
Co-Chair Johnson? Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Travis Miller. I'm with the Chief Financial Office.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, my name is Erica Kleiner. I'm the Business and Licensing Services Manager with the Oregon Real Estate Agency.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. We're going to present the budget in the format that you've asked for with the 10 points that are laid out. The first thing is discuss the mission of the real estate agency. And the real estate agency is there to protect the Oregon consumer of real estate, escrow, and land development services, and also to balance the professional environment that is conducive to a healthy real estate market. Our goals are to improve service delivery. And to that, we have done a couple of things over the years. Most recently, we have added an individual who is taking care of the phone calls that come in a live format. For many of you who probably had an opportunity to deal with phone trees, they are and can be a little frustrating. We have an individual who answers the phone in person. It has been very widely received. And Sue does a great job for us. In addition to that, one of the other things that we've done to improve service delivery is we've instituted an electronic licensing system. Our electronic licensing system allows an individual who wants to initially apply for a license, who becomes a licensee and wants to move their license from one firm to another, or change the status of their license from either a principal broker, or a property manager, or to renew their license. All of that is done online. It's the first one in the nation that has that complete a involvement, and it has been very, very successful, although we had initially, when we instituted it, a couple of people who gave us a little pushback. One of the requirements is that you need to have a email address with the agency. We had an individual who was a little concerned about giving us their email address. We indicated to them that they needed to do that in order to be able to renew their license. They ultimately gave us an email address that said, "The real estate agency sucks at Gmail." So they weren't very happy with us, but they did renew. Other goals are to provide consumer protection, and we do that, and a lot of that is done through education of our licensees. As I mentioned earlier, we have broker, which is our entry-level license, principal broker, which is a supervisory-level license, and property management licensee that oversees and does licensing but cannot do brokerage activities. One of the things that we have done recently is we have changed completely all of the education requirements to make them current. And in order to do that, we went through a job description for each of the three licenses that we have and had a detailed job description of that. Out of that, then we determined the education that a minimally qualified person needed to have in order to become a licensee initially. And at that same time, we also instituted a new test for each of those three licenses. More recently, in the last couple of months, we've taken those tests, and we've taken the test questions and reviewed them, and our testing provider provided us with information about those test questions that are either too easy or too difficult. And we've had an opportunity to rewrite those and to test those to see if they are going to better test an individual to make sure that they're minimally qualified to become a licensee. And other things that we've done is, with regard to our goals, is to promote workforce excellence. We have a staff now of 29 FTE, and because of the recent changes with e-license, that's allowed us to downsize some, and we've allocated people to other tasks that we wanted to be able to do but didn't have the manpower to do, and that's been very, very successful. The other thing that we do is we have invited all of our managers at one time or another to go to Arello. Arello is a acronym for the Association of Real Estate Licensing Law Officials. And what it does is it allows individuals to interact with their peers throughout the United States and Canada so that they have an opportunity, if you're a licensing manager, you're an education manager, you're a regulations manager, you have an opportunity to deal with people who work in the same field that you do, and it gives them an opportunity to develop a network of people if they have an issue that they can reach out to, and it's been very, very successful for us. The historical perspective of the agency, we are, as of Saturday, going to be 96 years old. We are the oldest real estate licensing regulation entity in the United States. Now, I've told this story a couple of times, and Co-Chair Johnson's not here, so fortunately she won't get to have to hear it again. But Oregon had, as of February 14th of 1919, passed a law that allowed the creation of the real estate agency. California had done so a couple of years before that, but their law was determined to be unconstitutional, so we slipped in and beat them out. So Wayne Bell, who is my counterpart in California, and I have a great laugh over that now and then. Couple of other things with regard to our programs. Our primary programs are education, as I've mentioned. We have the education division manager who oversees the pre-license education and also the continuing education for all of our licensees. And as of 2014, we had some 2,302 individuals take our test to become either a broker, a principal broker, or a property management licensee. And out of that, in our licensing division, which oversees the licensing activity, which is what Eric is in charge of, that opportunity, we ended up with a total of 1,675 new licensees for calendar year 2014. Our regulations division oversees complaints from the public, from other licensees and property managers, escrow individuals who are wanting to file a complaint in the agency. And then last year for 2014, we had some 378 complaints filed against individuals. Out of that, that resulted in about 140 investigations that we did on individuals. And some of the activities that they have done are misrepresenting the property. We find with property managers, because they're controlling a considerable amount of money, we've had two or three instances where they have embezzled funds from their clients, and we have taken actions to reprimand them or, more importantly, to revoke their licenses. In addition to that, we've also had a couple of situations where we've had a receiver put in place to take over the operation of the company because there were still funds there that were in jeopardy. So that takes care of education, licensing, and regulations. We also have a small land development operation which does condo filings, and in last year we had nearly 130 condo filings come into the agency that we oversee for the initial application of a condo or the modification of a condo project. And again, it's aimed at protecting the public and making sure that the individual who buys a condominium understands what they're getting themselves into. In terms of people, in terms of people that we serve the general public, applicants for our licenses, our licensees, people who are developers of real estate projects, attorneys who are primarily aimed at real estate activities, professional organizations representing licensees and escrow and property management and building and development people, and government organizations. And as you'll see in our appendix, you'll see an organization chart of the agency which shows the individual licensees, or excuse me, the individual managers and their component parts. In terms of program delivery, the real estate commissioner is responsible for the policy direction and leadership of the agency. The deputy commissioner really functions as the chief operating officer and is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the agency. And the managers themselves are responsible for their individual operations and programs. And our, as an example, our deputy commissioner has been in state service and has more than 30 years of activity and had times during his career spent time in both the justice and energy departments. Our education manager is both a teacher and an escrow manager, so she functions very well and understands the industry. Erica, who is our business service and licensing manager, has spent time both in LFO and in BAM, or now CFO. So she oversees a lot of our budget activities and brings a great deal of expertise to that. Selena Barnes, who oversees our regulations division, has previous history as a police detective and is an excellent investigator. And Michael Hannafin, who oversees our land development operation, is an attorney. And on weekends, he spends time as a JAG lawyer for the
Judge Advocate General.
Say again?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Judge Advocate General.
Yeah. Yes. Moving on to our key performance measures. We have five key performance measures, and I'll go through the ones that we're doing pretty well at and talk about one that we're not doing so well at. Key performance measure number two is the number of, or the percentage of investigations that are completed within 150 days. Our target is 60, and our actual is 62%. So we're doing fairly well at that. In addition, we historically used to also track the average number of days to complete an investigation, and they had been in the history up in the 200 plus range. They are now, as of a calendar year 2014, at 130 days. Key performance measure number three is contested case actions resolved through settlement. When we do an investigation that's going to result in an administrative action against an individual, we offer them an opportunity to go through a settlement process, and generally speaking, that's been extremely successful. Our target for this KPM is 95%. And our actual for the calendar year 2014 is also 95%, so we've done very well with that. Key performance measure number four is the percent of licensees who rate the board-administered exam as good or excellent. Our target there is 75%. Our actual is 72%. And what happens is, after they have taken the exam, 6 months after that, we send them an email asking them to rate the opportunity and the exam that they took in order to become licensed. We also ask them about how they performed on the recent test. And here again, we're getting 72 out of 75%, which is our target. That number had fallen when we instituted the new test, so 72 is moving in the right direction, and we're moving upwards. Key performance measure number 5 is a customer satisfaction, and it's a percentage of 6 different areas that are all rated at 90%, and the overall percentage is 92. Timeliness is 90. Accuracy of information is 92%. Helpfulness is 90%. The availability of information is 91%, and expertise is 90%. And all of those are moving in the right direction. Our area of concern with our KPMs is a KPM that, number 1, which is a compliance review rating. And what it is it's the percentage of property managers or principal brokers who meet the compliance of their information within 45 days after a mail-in compliance survey. And this survey we send out all over the area of, well, let me back up and say the way I'm saying it. We pick a county and send it out to the county and give them an opportunity for either principal broker, who is a supervising level individual, or a property manager who also has supervisory responsibilities for property management, and ask them how they did in their compliance review. And it's entirely voluntary, and it is educational in its intent. Of the 491 that we sent in calendar year 16 people responded. So this is a terrible response. One of the things that we're doing right now is looking at what we're going to do with that particular program. We used to use the number of active brokers, and right now we have active brokers that are 5,900 and change. So 16 people responding out of that, or even of the 491 that we sent it out to, is not very good. So the question on the table that we're looking at right now is, what do we do with this program? Do we bag the program? Do we make it mandatory? Do we somehow figure out another way to approach the people and give them an opportunity to provide us with a feedback? That answer we don't have yet, and we're still working on it. So. All of the annual performance reports are in your appendix. I'll move on now to our budget drivers and our environmental factors. The budget drivers, really, because we're another funded agency, are the number of licensees. We are now up over the bottom. We started out and peaked in August of 07 at 24,607 licensees. When we bottomed out in October of 2012, we had 17,965. We'd lost 6,600 and change, or about 27% of our licensees. And as another funded agency, that made things particularly difficult. So we went through a series of things to do to kind of cut down on our expenses. We fortunately started out with a reasonably decent reserve. We have slowly but surely worked our way through that reserve.
Mr. Chair.
Another sort of an aside.
Excuse me, Mr. Bentley, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I'd like to touch on that a little bit, on spending down your reserves right now, because the way that you would need to replenish those eventually is to raise the fees.
Yep.
Do you have any kind of a prognostication on when that's going to happen, or are you delaying so long that you're going to whack people with inordinately high fees? Have you talked with your universe of constituents to see how they'd like to handle it? Because I agree, carrying those huge reserves, maybe not such a good idea, but how are you managing the PR around the need to raise fees sometime in the future?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, you're a little ahead of where I was going to pitch it, but I'll get to that right now. What we're doing, and we anticipate, and we haven't asked for a fee increase in this coming biennium, but we have every reason to believe that we will be asking for a fee increase in the biennium following that, because at that point in time, we will have spent down our reserves down to the point where it's about as low as it should be. We're starting out with reserves that are about $1.4 million. We'll have them down slightly over $500,000 at that point in time. Several things that we're looking at. One, there's some cost savings that we're looking to do, and I'm kind of getting ahead of myself a little here, but we're looking at what we can do to save costs. Some of the things that we're looking at are the opportunity to change where we are located. We're spending about $17,000 a month for a facility that we're in. We are probably to occupy about two-thirds of the space if we were to get us all together. So we're looking at other places to go to do that, and we're in the process of doing that right now. We also are looking at other ways to save funds. One of the things that we're looking at is the cost for an individual, for an entity who is proposing a condominium. We currently have a fee that is $45 an hour. We're looking at making that probably more contemporary as a way of raising fees. We're also looking at things that we can do to reduce the cost of our operations. A lot of the mailings that we do, we are no longer mailing in hard copy. We're using email as a way to do that. So we're looking at various ways and various income streams. One of the other things that is on the table that is in the discussion phase, and this is a discussion that we're intending to have post the session, is to figure out what we can do to either raise more money from other fees or to increase the fee to our licensee. Now, assuming for sake of conversation that we only raise fees to our licensees, the last time we had a fee increase to our licensees was in 1997, and if we do that for the 2017 time frame on, it will have been 20 years since we've raised the fees, so that's probably not a surprise to anybody. In my opportunity to speak to the industry, I've spent a lot of time letting them know that a fee increase is in all probability coming. We're also looking at other things that we can do that will raise revenues rather than just a fee increase itself. So I don't know whether that answers your question or not, but
it does. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
I should know this, and I don't. Who owns your building?
DAS.
That's what I thought. Are you getting appropriate services from DAS and looking at your facility needs and managing the facility and thinking that maybe you need to go someplace else?
Yes, we just started that process recently. We've asked them for a list of all of the various opportunities that are out there, either DAS-owned or owned by third parties. So we're just in the process of starting to look at that. It's something that is out into the future.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
Why don't we continue, Mr. Bentley?
I'm sorry. Representative Whitson.
How many people, FT and part-time, are in that building that you're paying the $17,000 a month on?
Co-chairs, Representative Witt, we have 29 FTE. Some of our people, particularly investigators, have an opportunity to work from home occasionally, not all the time, because we need to have them interact with their peers. Does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We good? All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So that, in regards to the budget drivers, as I mentioned, it's really a number of licensees that we have. We are currently at 19,144, so we've kind of come up from the bottom of 17,965, and we continue to see increases in that. With regard to environmental issues, with regard to the industry, the marketplace is currently moving in the right direction. I think probably all of you have had an opportunity to hear both the press and the general conversations about what's happening in real estate. Some of the difficulties that we're experiencing in real estate right now are that there isn't very much inventory out there, so you're seeing multiple offers on a property and people competing to get into the property. part of that is that a lot of the smaller developers are having difficulty borrowing funds in order to be able to start to build homes, to put new stuff into the marketplace. So those are kind of difficulties that they're having. I think that the issue of individuals being able to have a hard time borrowing is to some degree behind us. It's not easy, but then it ought not to be as easy as it was what got us into trouble. So that's kind of the industry environmental piece of it. Internally, we continue to work to kind of improve the operations that we have within the agency. E-license has been a big help for us. It's allowed us to repurpose a lot of the people that we have. We also are in the process of reorganizing.
We have gone from five operations to four.
Question.
Mr. Real Estate Commissioner, perhaps you would amplify on e-licensing a little bit. There are people that are new to this subcommittee, and there are people that are new to Ways and Means and certainly haven't been exposed to your agency. Could you amplify what you're doing in that area and why it matters?
Certainly. Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, committee members, e-license is a electronic licensing system that allows individuals from the time that they first apply for a license to go through that. They then take 150 hours to become a broker. Once they get that approved, they then have the opportunity to take the test. When they take the test, they then go through and they submit their fingerprints electronically as opposed to having them all with ink on them. And that speeds the process. And once that is approved, then they can become licensed. They electronically have a principal broker who brings them into their organization, because as a brand spanking new broker, you have to spend time with a principal broker who oversees you, and you have to have a minimum of 3 years before you can become a principal broker. Again, the e-licensing system that you can do through the internet, you can do 24/7, and for a person who is a active broker, having to come to the agency Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, was an imposition on the time that they spent working as a broker with their clients. So now they can do it in the middle of the night in their jammies or however they want to do that, because it's all available to them electronically through the internet.
And if I could just ask a quick question there, I know Senator Johnson, you want to continue. Where do I go in the middle of the night in my jammies to get an electronic fingerprint?
Not the electronic fingerprint. Excuse me. Co-Chair Gomberg, the electronic fingerprint is done at the testing site. So when you go to take your test to become a licensee, at that same time, you have the ability to submit your electronic fingerprints so that you can do the background check. The background check then goes to the Oregon State Police and the FBI. But again, it's at the testing site where your electronic fingerprints are taken. We don't take them after that, but the e-licensing system acknowledges that you've done that, and once you go through the background check, if everything is good to go, then you're able to become licensed, and once you're able to become licensed, then a principal broker can pick you up electronically through the internet and bring you into their operation, and then you're good to go to start to become a broker.
All right, thank you. And I'm sorry, Senator, I was starting to ask before I saw your hand up.
Thank you. Colleagues, I was just using this as a tee-up to call attention to some of the really innovative things that the Real Estate Commissioner is doing. My first exposure to this agency, it was a basket case. There were people complaining, phones were ringing off the hook in this building, and since Commissioner Bentley has been there, I don't think I've had a peep out of anybody. And I am just suggesting that this is one of these instances where the value of customer service is really translating into service to the real estate community, which I'm sure has been buffeted by the recession. And if there was ever a time when the relationship between the regulatory agency and the licensees was lifted up, and improved. It's been in the last, what, 5, 6, 7 years, and things here are so much better than they were. That's not to say that there shouldn't be continuous improvement, but I wanted this opportunity to say that since we had a special task force on the agency that went all over the state, listening to people come in droves to complain about how bad it was, this is a miraculous turnaround. And the e-licensing, I hope before you're done, you talk a little bit about your plans for continuing ed credits. And then obviously with all the technology that you're employing, when is your desire for technology going to outstrip your systems, and when are you going to need to think about IT upgrades?
Co-Chair Gombard, Co-Chair Johnson, with regard to upgrades, the system is provided through Iron Data, and they host the information that is on the e-license system. We are in the process right now of gearing up for an upgrade to that system. That will occur probably in the next couple of months. And at that same time, one of the things that we will add to that system is the ability for our licensees, when they renew their license, to upgrade, to add to the database the information of the continuing education that they've taken in the previous 2 years. They're required to take 30 hours of continuing education, and as it stands right now, they can only upload that information during the time frame when they are renewing their license, which is the 1 month prior to the expiration of their license. With this new upgrade, we'll have the ability for them to upload that information anytime during the 2 years that they're in their licensing period. With regard to future activities with licensing and e-licensing and electronics, we're looking at everything that we can do that it will make it work. We are the first probably in the nation that has as an exotic a system as there is. We have had an opportunity to talk to a number of different organizations about our e-licensing system. Our counterpart from Washington came down to Oregon to review our system so that they are looking at a similar set of circumstances for themselves up in the state of Washington. So we're looking at ways that we can improve the operation wherever possible. So, I mean, that's just one of our basic goals. I hope that answers the question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to major program changes, we really haven't had any major program changes as such. Program changes essentially being that we have something other than education licensing regulations and the operation of the land development. We used to have two operations, licensing and administration. We have merged those, and that's happened a couple of years ago. And Erica makes sure that we remember the new name of it, which is Business Services, Business and Licensing Services Division, which is kind of a mouthful. But other than that, we're looking for ways that we can improve the operation. We have probably taken a lot of the low-hanging fruit off the table, but we're looking for everything we can do. As I mentioned earlier, we're looking at travel. We're looking at rent. We're looking at general office expenses. One of the things that we've done is we've changed our HR our operation. That we were faced with a situation where the cost of our HR operation was going to go up by about 300%. We have found a lesser expensive and equally qualified capability through another organization.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, again.
That's
Senator
a little
Johnson.
Vague. Through another organization? Put a little meat on them bones.
Well, we went from DAS, excuse me, Chair Gombard, Co-Chair Johnson, we went from DAS to Fish and Wildlife, and Fish and Wildlife is providing us with the services.
That raises an interesting question, colleagues, because some of us have just come from hearing the DAS budget and talking about the services that they're providing to small agencies. Here's a small agency that, for whatever reasons, was not satisfied with DAS and went to Fish and Game. And I didn't know that Fish and Game was providing small agency and commission backroom services. That's going to be an interesting question to pose to DAS.
And the Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, and I mean, Fish and Wildlife is struggling with their budget, and I'm just trying to figure out, after we just had an hour and a half of assurances that DAS was the premier shop in the world to do these backroom services, I find it quite interesting that you should be fleeing to ODF&W. So I don't need to take the whole committee's time, but I sure would like to know some of the rationale behind your departure.
Okay. Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, do you want to do that offline? Or
might as well just do it now if you don't mind, if the committee will indulge the last
Essentially,
question.
It was a economic decision and a service decision. If we could get equal service and not have the increase, then it was worthy doing.
Too expensive, bad service, go to ODF&W.
The coming cost for DAS, not okay. The current.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Whitsitt?
I don't understand, because I'm new on this committee, how an agency provides a sort of a sub-agency, I guess. Aren't they less than DAS in terms of providing services? I'm not understanding how this happens.
Mr. Chair, may I comment?
Please.
None of us are, and this isn't my first rodeo on this issue. I've been doing DAS's budget since I came into the building. This is the first time that I have heard of ODF&W providing small agency and commission financial services, and I think it's a question most appropriately directed to Mr. Jordan. We just had, as I said, an hour and a half of talking about how the price structure was set and how it was that this accommodated small boards, small agencies and boards and commissions. And so as the chair of the committee where, as the one of the members of the committee where DAS is appearing, this will certainly go on the record tomorrow. And I think you know someone else who sits on that committee.
Well, Senator Johnson, of course, we have Mr. Miller here. Do you have anything to add to this conversation, sir?
I certainly, Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, I certainly can't speak for DAS or Michael Jordan, broadly speaking, but interagency agreements amongst multiple agencies are common. One of my other client agencies, Land Use Board of Appeals, actually has most of its finances through Department of State Lands. It's not something we prohibit. Actually, we encourage it. We work amongst agencies and we'll even convene them to develop shared service models. If it makes more sense for the agency and if they can save money, they should do it.
So I have a question.
Yeah. Yeah. Representative Whitson?
So does the budget for Fish and Wildlife, what part of their budget does this come out of where they're able to offer money to other agencies? I'm still not getting how this is happening. Because they have a budget, right? Fish and Wildlife has a budget, and we're supposed to know what that budget is because they've delineated what the money's for. Where is this money coming from to help smaller agencies that are unrelated? Real estate is not related to Fish and Wildlife.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, essentially special payments, interagency agreements, transfers from one agency to another. So the budget paying for that service is in the agency receiving the service, and that's transferred to the agency providing it.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have become very interested and want to make sure that we're not using license and tag fees to subsidize other state agencies under general fund. And I would like an answer to that, and it doesn't have to be now. Folks can look into it, but I want an answer. That agency apparently has significant problems that it's coming after general fund money. I don't like what I've heard.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Miller, respectfully, I got caught kind of lost in your explanation. We're talking about a fee for service, right?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, yes, it's a fee-for-service model. So whatever services that ODF&W or DSL or whichever agency it is providing, they should receive the revenue consistent with that service level.
But let me make no mistake. ODF&W, and I'm right where Representative Witt is, I don't know whether they have a cost recovery model or whether they're pricing the service at a level that makes them whole, or whether, in effect, we're doing just exactly what Representative Witt pointed out, is subsidizing the backroom procedures, operations of any agency. I don't care if it's real estate, any agency. I'd like to know what other, and if somebody's out there listening in agency land, I think we want to know what other backroom services ODF&W is providing for what other small agencies or boards and commissions.
Absolutely.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I can't speak to the budget of ODF&W. I would imagine that they wouldn't be providing the service if they weren't coming out ahead.
I think you can paint some of us skeptical. You might want to just share that with the mothership when you go back home, that some of us are pretty curious.
Were there other questions? Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not a question, but a comment. There's an agency that's come to us saying that they have a problem with being able to staff up the department, and they're farming out personnel to other agencies. This is troubling. I don't like what I've heard here.
Comments or questions? Senator?
Even the frogs are croaking.
I would just say ditto. I agree with Representative Witt. It's befuddling to me why in the world this is happening, but I would like an explanation also. Thank you.
Could I say something?
Yes, Representative Witt.
Could we also find out what other agencies are doing this, a complete list of where this is happening? You mentioned one thing, but could we have a list of all of them?
Mr. Chair?
If I could just interrupt for just a second. I'm going to ask if the committee could just stand at ease for just a moment. If you'd bear with us. Sorry, I need to gavel us out.
Just to stay at ease.
We're going to stand at ease for just a moment. We're back in session. We just took a minute at ease to review some of this very interesting information. But I think what we've got here is a situation that perhaps is more properly addressed to DAS than to the commissioner from the real estate agency. And Senator Johnson, can we trust that since you're on general, you're co-chairing general government, that that this issue may be raised in the morning?
I'm not, Mr. Chair. Sorry. I'm not co-chairing general government, but I am on that sub, and this will absolutely be raised tomorrow. I will ask, for the benefit of this committee, a written explanation from DAS as to why this particular anomalous situation has occurred and what other agencies are shopping for services other than at DAS for whatever reason. And I'll ask that the professional staff get a copy of that written response and it be disseminated to this committee.
Everybody good? Mm-hmm. Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I appreciate Senator Johnson doing that. I would still appreciate, and I know by this point, word's gotten around to somebody because they're watching on the television. I'd like ODF&W to inform me, and there may be others that would like it, of how it is that they're hungry for staffing in certain positions and we're carrying extra loads, apparently for time and that personnel that they're farming out to other agencies. And it may be full cost recovery. It does not matter to me. Why are we funding that position? Why aren't we funding positions within ODF&W?
Point noted, Representative. And
I agree.
And I will take it upon myself to forward that request and get a response for this committee to those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I suspect there's somebody working on it right now.
Any other questions? Mr. Bentley, where were we?
Before the doo-doo hit the fan?
back to things that we're doing to save money. And that's an example of the things that we've done to be able to save funds for the real estate agency itself. Some of the major budget issues are, as I mentioned earlier in my comments, we haven't had a fee increase since 1997. Currently, we charge $230 for a two-year period to have your license. As an active license, we charge $110 for a two-year period for an inactive license. And we have every reason to believe that we're going to be looking at a fee increase of some sort, or at least a revenue increase of some sort, coming up in not this biennium that is we're coming into, but the biennium following that. Moving on to our budget, as you have an opportunity to look at our budget, we have underspent our limitation on a kind of a consistent basis in the last four bienniums. Our opening beginning balance as far as other funds in our reserve is $1.4 million and change. Our revenue, which is a conservative number and anticipates that perhaps we won't see a huge increase in the number of licensees, is $6,226,000 and change. We have some funds out of that that will go to the general funds, about $50,000, which gives us a total available revenue of $7,638,000 and change. Our expenditures are about $7,603,000 and change, with some adjustments that takes it down to $7,123,799, as you'd heard earlier, and that will leave us with an ending balance at the end of that biennium of $514,214, and at least that's the forecasted number. If we do what we've been doing on an ongoing basis, we'll probably have a slightly higher number than that. We tend to underspend our limitation. Item number 9 is proposed legislation.
Mr. Bentley, we have another question. Representative Whitsitt.
So you have a balance left over at the end of $514,000, is that right? Is that your ending fund balance from your budget?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, committee members, Representative Whitsitt. Yes, that's true. These are funds that are paid to us. When we receive the funds, if you pay your fees to us today, they are for the next 24 months. So this is a reserve amount that we had during the heyday when we had people, everybody and their mother wanted to be a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. And we've been working those down slowly but surely.
So that,
follow-up.
So that would be the basis of increasing your license fees, because you anticipate that you're working down to a zero or less than zero then for your ending balance?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt, yes, that's true. We will work our way down to the point where our reserve amount's about 2 to maybe 3 months worth of reserves for us, and that's about as low as we need to go in order to function properly economically.
And follow up,
please.
That's not including the cuts that you're talking about making in your $17,000 a month rent. I mean, you're not including your cuts in what you're projecting you're going to end up being at zero balance or below then, right? I mean, that's spending like you're spending now.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt. Yes, that's true. If we can save more money, that number will be slightly larger.
Please.
As I mentioned, proposed legislation, we have no proposed legislation for this session. You'll find in your appendices the standard 10% reduction option, and we have no long-term open vacancies. So that concludes my prepared remarks. I would open it to questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Bentley. And it looks like we have a number of questions, but I wanted to go back to key performance measure number 2, and you don't need to pull that up. I can just give you my question, and that is that your target was to resolve 60% of your investigations within a 5-month period, and you actually were able to conclude 62% of them. Do we have a sense of not just how many are concluded in that targeted amount of time, but rather what the average time is to conclude an investigation?
Average, Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, committee members, the average time for 2014 was 130 days.
130 days?
Yeah.
Okay, so it was actually less, the average time was less than your target.
That's overall. Okay. For all of the investigations that we have. Now, keep in mind that some of these complaints that we receive are not in our turf, so they don't go to an investigation.
All right. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Nierman.
Thank you. Chair Gomberg, I'm new here, so I'm not sure how to proceed on this, but my wife works for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and actually I know for a fact that she was involved in issuing security credentials for giving other agencies the access that they needed to process payroll. And as to my knowledge, she wasn't involved in any of the management decisions to do that. And I'm not sure if I need to declare a conflict of interest, but I feel comfortable that at the very least that I need to be transparent and say who I am and who's a member of my household and how they're involved. So if I...
it's not an actual conflict. He's known for it.
Yeah, I don't think we get any money from that, but I feel better knowing that I want to be transparent with the committee and with the DAS and with the real estate agency and with the public. So I'll just let that statement
stand. All
right,
thank you very much, Representative. We'll note that for the record. It doesn't appear that it's necessary to file a written explanation of a potential conflict.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions or comments? Yes, Senator.
Mr. Bentley, I was just curious on KPM number one. When you only got 16 responses back, why that ends up being 69%? It is my simple math has it quite a bit lower.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, Senator Hansel, that's 69% of the 16 people who responded who said that in 45 days they were up to speed. In other words, they were compliant. That's only the 16. That's not the entire amount.
Okay. So you're talking about eight people or nine people or something?
Roughly.
So the target was 90% of those who replied hit the target, not that you had 90% of people responding.
Correct.
Okay.
And we're hopeful to see what we can do about that program to make sure that it's far more effective than it is. It's not very effective at all. And it is an opportunity for individuals who are principal brokers or property managers who oversee their operations to make sure that what they're doing is proper and that they are following the regulations that we have for them and their operation. And it is voluntary for them to do it. They get, if they do it, 3 hours of continuing education for free. So we've tried to bait it as much as possible to get them to participate, and we're not sure why people aren't participating. One of the things that we have heard anecdotally, whether it's true or not, it's another story, is that there are some individuals who are saying that they ought not to do this because the agency will use that to come over and beat them over the head. That's not the intent, and that's not the desire. Now, if they're stealing money, all bets are off. But we're trying to do that and make it very effective.
Okay.
Give you an opportunity as a licensee to say, okay, am I doing everything I should be doing properly? That's the really basic question on the table. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Other questions? Yes, Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Goldberg. I want to go back to key performance metric number two, and you don't have to bring it up on the slide. The percent of investigations completed within 150 days. What types of complaints, what's typical there? Or give me just a sampling of some of your bigger fish that you get there.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Nierman. A lot of the things that we see in terms of those kinds of activities, hang on, and I'll give you a kind of a shopping list of what we see in terms of those kinds of actions. I made a list because I kind of anticipated this question as soon as I get to where I put it. Kinds of activities that we see with regard to complaints. We see agency questions, in other words, who is the licensee representing? And sometimes they're attempting to represent both parties and not acknowledging that, and they can do that as long as both parties understand and respond that they know that they're representing both parties. That agency is a question. Misrepresentation of the property. They're a little too grandiose about the property itself or various things along that line. Property management, and we have a lot of issues with property management and money because they have, in some instances, significant amounts of money in their client trust accounts. Unlicensed activity, in other words, an individual who is performing professional real estate activity but does not hold a license. Advertising issues, generally those are issues around either a team or a group holding themselves out to the public as a team ABC when they're working for XYZ broker, but they don't show XYZ broker's name in their advertising. Also, occasionally we'll see situations where homeowner associations are managed by a licensee and there are issues along those lines. And then it kind of goes on from there. But those are kind of some of the major players.
That's helpful.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah. Can I follow up?
Please, follow up.
When you say it takes 100, you say the average is 130 days or 150 days is your target there. That's 5 months, which seems like kind of a long time to hold someone's license, to hold their livelihood in jeopardy. What causes the length there? Is it, do you have staffing issues, or could you do it faster, or is it the nature of the complaints? Is it tell me why it takes what to me seems so long.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Nierman. It tends to be just a issue of the process itself. When we get a complaint in, we review it. We give an opportunity for the person who is complained against to respond. That can take up to a month. Sometimes it can take longer if they're dragging their feet or they're trying to avoid us or they think if they don't respond, we'll go away. Then once we get into the investigation, depending on the complexity of the issue, some can happen rather quickly in a month or so. Sometimes takes plus a year, particularly if they are represented and there is a desire to protract the process for whatever reason. So it can go on for a significant amount of time, unfortunately.
Thank you.
I hope that answers the question.
Yep. Yeah.
Representative Whitson.
Does the agency levy fines, or is that a commission? Because we had someone in another committee today talking about a real estate office that had a $1,000 fine levied against it by the state because they moved to one wing of a building that was on a different street, and there was a delay in recording the new address of the same group. And I was just wondering, who levies fines for the real estate commission when there are things, or the agency, when there are things like this? This is a representative that told us this in committee.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Whitsitt. We have very little fining capability. We can issue a fine against a property manager who does not produce property management records when we request them, and that can be $1,000 a day up to $10,000. We have the ability to issue a civil penalty or a fine against unlicensed activity. That's in statute, and that ranges from $100 to $500 for the first instance and from $500 to $1,000 for the second instance. And beyond that, that's about all that we have in terms of the ability to issue civil penalties or fines.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Chair Gomberg. Commissioner Bentley, in June of last year, the Secretary of State concluded an audit of your agency and had three recommendations. So one of them was about securities and trust and reserve securities. There was another one which was other receivables, non-current allowance for uncollectibles, and the third one was cash receipts. How are you doing on addressing those issues in those audits?
Co-Chair Gomberg, Representative Nierman, I believe we've taken care of all three of those issues. Okay. I mean, it was very nice to have them come in and look at our operation and make sure that we were doing what we were supposed to be doing. They had some items on their list that we were not doing, and we are now.
Is that not correct, Erica?
Thank you.
Very good.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bentley. Mr. Miller, or I'm sorry, yeah.
Where are we at?
Okay. All right, and I know you introduced yourself previously, but it's been a little while, so I'd invite you to do so again.
There we go. Thank you. Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Travis Miller. I'm with the Chief Financial Office, and I'm here to present the 2015-17 governance budget for the real estate agency. In terms of policy and funding issues, there's not a lot to discuss. This budget maintains current operations. There are no policy option packages. In terms of alignment with Oregon's 10-year plan, we really kind of tie this to the public safety outcome area, essentially protecting consumers. I would also argue that that kind of ties into jobs in the economy. If we have a market built on trust, it's going to operate more effectively. Looking at the budget, it's $7.1 million. That's exclusively other funds, primarily business and licensing. It's about 90% of their budget comes from licensing revenue. The other thing I want to mention is that the revenue tends to be pretty stable, and it's the way that they've structured their renewal system. Essentially, it just operates on birthday. So instead of having all of their licensing revenue coming in a single month and then having to kind of spend that down over 8 or 9 months, it's pretty stable over time. I mean, obviously, there might be some fluctuations here and there. But it lessens the concern over a somewhat smaller ending balance. In terms of the ending balance, as was mentioned before, just over 500,000, 514,214, that equates to about 1.7 months. A little bit small. It was also a source of concern for myself, and one of the reasons that I cut out some limitation and actually eliminated one position within the budget to kind of bolster that. But based on our appeals and discussions, given the strength of the real estate market and increasing licensees, I think they're safe in terms of having enough money. FTE, as I mentioned, there was a slight reduction. They're now down to 29 FTE. And lastly, turning to revenue, we're starting to see revenues pick up. The real estate agency is slowly recovering, and really the number of licensees directly translates into revenue. And that essentially concludes my presentation. If there are any questions?
Any questions for Mr. Miller? All right. Well, thank you all very much.
And thank you.
We'll excuse you, and we do have one person signed up for public testimony. That would be Byron Hendricks. You want to come on up? Thank you.
I don't want to drink your Pepsi since you're sick.
I know. Mm-hmm. You'll get the bug.
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, my name is Byron Hendricks. I'm in Salem, Oregon, and I have a number of roles that I guess I could address to say that I support this budget. First, I'm a member of the public, and consumer protection is what this agency is about. Second, I'm a citizen, so you're spending my money, our money, together, and I think that has value. Third, I'm a licensee. I'm regulated by the real estate agency. Fourth, I'm a business owner, so I understand the pressures of budget, and I've had the chance to review the commissioner and Erica Kleiner do a marvelous job of our budget. Next, I'm appointed by the governor to serve on the board of the real estate agency, and I chair that board and have for the last four and a half years, I guess it is. My term ends the latter part of this year. And I would just say overall, in watching the real estate agency perform over this last, it's actually about 7.5 year period, 7 1/3, as Senator Johnson said, it's come a long way. the real estate agency, some of the things that the commissioner's done that I think a committee that's responsible for their funding is, he's accurately used the funding not only to operate his organization, but he has taken this organization out across the state. We meet four times a year, and except when the legislature's in session, we basically travel so the consumers could attend. Mostly we have licensees attend those meetings to better understand the real estate agency and how he operates, how it operates. He usually takes the managers from the divisions there so they can hear about regulation, they can hear about condominium control, they can hear about the operating budget and those activities, and I think it's been very effective for them. As a member of the board, our duty solely as the board, again, the governor appointed, is education and license waivers. However, the commissioner has used us also as an advisory board on programs that he intends to put in place, on cuts that he has intended to make and made and executed very well. And I think it's a great thing from not only the industry standpoint, but also from a consumer standpoint, that there are there's real involvement, which we hadn't always had in the past. There's a nine members of the Real Estate Agency Board. The commissioner's done a great job of trying to make sure that the governor understood what the members of that board should comprise. We have people who represent property management. We have people who represent development. We have people who represent small firms, large firms, then two public members that they're smart people, they listen well, they act well, and they don't mind asking the commissioner or his staff any tough questions at all. I'll tell you also that the only association I have with fish and wildlife is the fact that I renewed my angler's license this year. I don't say that offensively, but as a business owner, I was quite pleased that the agency was able to save money in the process. I understand your concern that if it's coming at subsidy, it shouldn't, but I've had the chance to meet the ombudsman, or the person we were assigned from Fish and Wildlife, and they came in with a great attitude towards helping the agency in the process. So didn't question it from your same position, but I would say that you hope that all government could run that way. Not subsidizing others, but running their thing programs efficiently so that charges could be less in the process. The last thing I'd really add to it is that I believe that the savings that have occurred at the real estate agency for licensees have been well respected by the industry. So obviously our industry, like most, has trade associations. It's local realtor agent organizations like the Salem Association of Realtors. I'm members of five of them up and down the I-5 corridor. But then we go to the state and then to National Association of Realtors. And the commissioner's done a great job of being open with them in communication. They're not buddies. You know, it's just as it should be. It's an appropriate balance. He's not afraid to say, if you steal the money, I'm going to get you. And I think that's been helpful in the process. He's also said, as he mentioned to you, that he hasn't increased, there's been no increase in licensing since 1997. It's a source of pride in the process that they've been able to manage it well, but he's done a great job of telling them this ain't going to last forever. And I think that I would just tell you, while I'm not here to speak for the industry on an official basis, it's been heard by anybody who will listen that it's coming. So I think you can have good confidence in the agency and what they presented. I appreciate the time to present to you just my comments on it. I'm happy to entertain any questions that you might have.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hendricks. Any questions? Again, thank you for being here. Thank you for your perspective and for your years of service.
Thanks very much.
Well, that's the last testimony we have. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on SB 5537. Senator Johnson typically handles the gavel tomorrow. She has a treat for the committee, and that is a day off. So we have no meeting tomorrow. We'll be reconvening on Thursday. And Ms. Dyster, we're talking about aviation?
You
may very well be talking about aviation. That is not my assignment. That will be Miss Julie Naburka. So she'll be with you. She'll be with you on Thursday.
And then we'll see you again on Monday. So you get 2 days off.
There you go.
All right. Anything else for the good of the order? All right. I'll go ahead and conclude the meeting today. Thank you.
All right.
The meeting today. Thank you.